This is the Capitol Hill Show with Tim Constantine.
Everybody, it's Tim Constantine with you on the Capitol Hill Show. Now, in little more than a week, OPEC and non-OPEC members of the oil cartel, the world out there that controls that market, decides how much you are going to pay at the pump. They're going to meet and talk about the freeze of oil production. There has been a theoretic freeze. What's really going on? It's very tough to tell in today's world because the Saudis say one thing. Sometimes other parts of the world, you know, Iran's in the mix now, so you can't tell what they may or may not do. There are parts of the globe that make it much more complex than it used to be. Joining me right now to talk about it is the Program Director for International and Geopolitical Studies at the Bahrain Center for Strategic, International, and Energy Studies. He's also affiliated with the Mercatus Center in Washington, D.C., it's our friend Omar El-Ubaidli. Hi there, Omar. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I understand you're getting a little rain in Bahrain today, so I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign, but you'll take what you can get, I suspect.
No, rain is always good news in this part of the world.
Indeed. Let's talk about what's going on in the world. Is it good news or bad news? You know, at the gas pump, we saw prices dip in the United States considerably as the market kind of came down, 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 demand, demand, demand. And there's all kinds of theories. Is that trying to squeeze out some of the U.S. suppliers? What is going on? But now there's been, theoretically, this freeze going on to try to stabilize and get things back up. When OPEC sits down with themselves and with outsiders, what's going to happen?
What's going to happen is more of the same, which means they're going to try to come to an agreement. They're going to fail to come to an agreement. And you're just going to see everybody continue pumping out more or less as much oil as they can. And prices are not going to be increasing significantly anytime soon.
All right. So there's been some discussion that there would be a freeze, but we shouldn't think that that is real.
I mean, even if there is a freeze, that doesn't actually mean that prices are going to increase. That just means that everybody continues producing what they're producing. And a lot of the countries that are involved in a so-called freeze are countries that are producing pretty close to capacity anyway. So that doesn't actually mean much to say that they're freezing. It's much more about signaling intentions or trying to sort of jockey for position politically. But ultimately, it doesn't really mean anything when push comes to shove.
Give me a little energy 101 here. I remember Barack Obama in 2012, gas prices were sky high, and the president was running for re-election, and he was being criticized for its impact on the economy here in the United States, and why didn't he do something? And there were two or three things that he went to as his stock answer. One was, we can't drill our way out of this. We cannot, because it is a world market, we cannot impact that. And yet, I see at various times the Saudis will opt to increase their output or decrease their output. They will sometimes convince their fellow members in OPEC to increase or decrease. And it seems to me that when they do that, when they turn the spigot on or off, it does impact gas prices. Does the United States have enough of a market share, or could they, if they chose to drill, to actually have any impact on world prices?
So I would say, so previously, what you said about Saudi Arabia having an influence is true, but the influence that it now has is much less than before. The reason is because of shale oil. So prior to shale oil, the reason that Saudi Arabia would have such a profound influence on markets is because setting up new oil facilities is a time-consuming and expensive process. It takes 3, 4, 5 years to develop an oil field. So when you have Saudi Arabia running a lot of excess capacity and changing its output by, you know, 500,000, 1 million barrels, that's a lot, and nobody else really can respond because everybody else is more or less operating at capacity. But now when you have shale oil is far more flexible than traditional conventional oil. You can set up oil wells very quickly and have new output ready for market within weeks of issuing the order. And so the Saudi Arabian oil doesn't have anywhere near as an influence as it used to have on the market. And actually, one of the key drivers is now U.S. shale oil production. So it's just a different game to the game that you're used to seeing and the game that Barack Obama was talking about in 2012 and the ones we've all grown up in.
Short answer is, if in today's world, when we do have access to the shale oil, I know some of those are closing down now because of the low prices. They think it's not going to be a cost-effective, economically effective time for the businesses to move forward. But with that timeline, if it's a matter of weeks to get that thing going, is this something that is just perpetually on tap? Can the United States always be on standby, sort of, if the price starts to go sky high, these folks can drill in the Dakotas or in West Texas or wherever they happen to be?
Yes, that's basically 100% correct. The only qualification I would add to that is that they've recently been even more responsive than they would normally be, because the U.S. Federal Reserve ran basically zero interest rates, cheap money, and quantitative easing for several years after the financial crisis. And so there's a lot of this liquidity flying around that had nowhere to go, and so they all went to shale oil. So shale oil had unbelievably easy credit and access to capital, which leads to even more responsive than is normal. Now, interest rates have gone up a little bit, and the environment's a little bit more hawkish when it comes to monetary policy. And investors, the economy's doing well, so investors, you know, they're not looking for any old deal to put their money. They have choices and options. So yes, it is true that, you know, investors, that shale oil is almost on tap, but it's not quite as flexible as you're seeing at the moment, because investors have been a little bit pinched by what they've gone through in the last 6 months.
You mentioned how the Saudis, while they're still a giant player, have less influence than they used to. Talk to me about some of the places that, well, Iran, for example, is now in the game. They have not been, legally anyway, they have not been in the game for a long time. How much does something like Iran's entry impact the world's market?
So there's the direct effect, which is, I mean, they've bought online somewhere in the region of 500,000 barrels, I believe, several hundred thousand barrels since the lifting of the sanctions. But with Iran, it's much more than the direct effect. It's all about the indirect effect, which is that Iran has one of the largest oil reserves in the world, and it's also very cheap for Iran to produce oil. But a lot of those oil wells and oil facilities are either undeveloped or even non-existent, and require investment. So there's a cat and mouse game whereby Iran wants to pump out oil to sell oil and make profit, but at the same time it wants prices to be high because it needs high prices in order to attract the capital, the investment necessary to build up its capacity. It's very much the same story with Iraq. So this makes it very difficult to read exactly what their influence is, and markets don't know how much long-term oil there is coming from Iraq and Iran. And that's one of the reasons you see prices somewhat unstable and things looking still a little bit jittery.
Well, the other portion of that is that when you want to attract investors, you have to show some level of stability. And Iran and Iraq are not necessarily the poster children for stability, which was the second half of Barack Obama's argument back in 2012. He would blame instability, his word, instability in the Middle East, was one of the reasons for high prices. With that in mind, realizing that places like Iran and Iraq could produce a lot of oil, but they also could explode into some nonsense at some point and scare away investors, how important to the United States economy is it to bring in that Canadian pipeline, to bring in something that provides an alternative to a dependence on Middle East oil?
Well, first of all, I would say that Iran is, you know, I mean, superficially it may look unstable, but actually, you know, they've gone through some tough times, and they don't seem to be, you know, they don't seem to be particularly worse for it. So I wouldn't exaggerate the instability in Iraq. Iraq is highly unstable. However, one of the few areas which is stable in Iraq, the oil fields, which happen to be in the south, in the area where the government is strong, and you know, they've put all their eggs in that basket, and they've made sure that no matter what sort of upheaval and violent conflict is going on in some of the other areas of Iraq, oil will continue to pump. So I don't think there's a risk of any disruptions to supply. In particular, in 2012, when Obama was talking, one of the issues that was being raised was the idea that Iran might close off the Straits of Hormuz as some sort of terrorist or a geopolitical game. those kind of possibilities are highly diminished because Iran now wants to show the world that it can be a positive neighbor and that it can that it's not going to disrupt commerce in any way. So really, the sort of things that used to disrupt oil supply and lead to the instability that the president cited don't really exist anymore. And even though there's plenty of people sadly dying and involved in violent conflict in the Middle East, it's not the sort of conflict that affects oil production. And as a consequence, I don't think America needs to worry about expanding its investments in Canada. Of course, it's always good to have a diverse portfolio of suppliers, but it's not anywhere near as pressing as it was before, because as a matter of fact, U.S. imports are declining because of all the domestic oil production and shale oil, and there's so many different customers, there's so many different suppliers on the market that there's really no need to run to the arms of Canada in the same way that might have been in the past.
Is there a downside as far as the United States is concerned? Obviously, there's a downside to suppliers in the Middle East, but is there a downside as far as the United States and the consumer is concerned if we were to move forward with the Keystone Pipeline and replace 47% of the daily delivery from the Middle East?
I think there is some environmental concerns, so that's something which is important, and the president has shown an increasing awareness of and has placed a pretty high weight on in lots of decisions taken in the recent past. Even actually, that could be something which even impacts upon domestic shale oil production. If you see, there's several states, including New York, which have actually banned shale oil, despite the fact that the states have significant budgetary difficulties and would, in principle, welcome additional revenues. But Barack Obama is clearly, and the Democrats more generally, have clearly taken a line of wanting to be pro-environment. Therefore, I would expect that there would be significant caution with respect to the any sort of oil relations with Canada, because at the moment, with so much cheap oil around, why damage your legacy of wanting to tackle global warming, of wanting to make America a quote-unquote greener leader in the world economy over something which is not as valuable as it used to be?
Final question before I let you go, Omar, and that is, I understand the impact of the belief in global warming, but you, as an expert in the world of energy, particularly in fossil fuels, do you buy the whole theory of global warming? By burning oil, are we destroying the planet?
I have to say, although I have some expertise in energy, I don't have an expertise in the in global warming from the sort of technical environmental side. I think it's clear to me that there's much more research that needs to be done before we take some definitive stances regarding some of these issues. But politics is a game which requires people to take decisions based on incomplete information, based on the flavor of the day. And at the moment, for whatever reason, better or worse, flavor of the day is being green, and that means taking a hard line on some of these oil issues, and whether or not they have a big impact in the long run.
From the center, the Bahrain Center for Strategic International and Energy Studies, it is Omar El Ubaidli. Omar, thank you for taking the time with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm Tim Constantine. This is the Capitol Hill Show. We are back with more in 2 minutes. Don't go away.